Ramor was back at the Shurgard Cup for the first time in 20 years on Saturday. He was a winner there. He was a winner of the Phoenix Stakes on Sunday. We'll look back on both those two, as well as another turbulent week for British Racecourses and Ross Orion's partially successful appeal in this week's edition of The Front Page. Yeah, welcome to the show, and joining me, Lee Mutter said this week, we've got in York, Matt Rennie. Hello, Matt.
How you doing? You all right?
Good, thank you, Matt. Looking forward to joining Matt at the Ebor Festival next week. And joining me on the sofa, making his front page debut, is Ollie Barnard. Good morning, Ollie.
Morning, Lee. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. And I was with Ollie on Saturday at Ascot for the Shurgard Cup. That's where we're going to kick off this week's show. It was victory for Team GB and Ireland. They won the Shurgard Cup, a team of Ryan Moore, Dylan Bram at Monaghan, and the captain, Safi Osborne, who was a winner on the day, as was Ryan Moore, had a double, and Safi Osborne was also the one who sprayed Ryan Moore with champagne during the victory celebrations. Ollie, you write a very upbeat piece, as did I, after the meeting on Saturday. What are your reflections on it?
Yeah, that was my second year covering it with you now. And I think it's an event that very much has its place in the racing calendar. It easily gets a lot of slack, but it's this unique team event. It's not comparable to the racing league that was happening, you know, that was over a long extended period of time. This is one event on the 362 days a year where we have this team event. We get to see jockeys from all over the world. And most importantly, I saw a lot of people having a really good time at Ascot. And I saw that same thing the year before. And it's a really accessible event for new people to come to racing and enjoy the day. And people are getting up in arms about that. I just kind of think it's one day of a year. What good is it going to do if you're getting frustrated at this event?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a fun day. It's actually the highlight of a day that otherwise would only have the Rose of Lancaster Stakes and the Sweet Solera at Newmarket. Haydock and Newmarket is the two big attractions. So it works really well. Ollie makes a point there that lots of people are having a good time, and there were lots of people. 21 plus thousand, it was at 13% up on last year. And Matt, a big difference this year was we had Ryan Moore for the first time in 20 years at the Shurgard Cup, helped by changes to the European fixture list, with the Phoenix Stakes moving from Saturday to Sunday. So Ryan Moore was back at the Shurgard Cup, helped as well by Hong Kong and Hong Kong Jockey Club coming in to be partners of the day. It was the first time the World Pool had been in action at the Shurgard Cup. There was a Hong Kong team as well, and the World Pool is the organisation for which Ryan Moore is an ambassador. So I imagine that was a factor in getting Ryan Moore to Ascot. And he was on great form as well with a double, Matt.
Yeah, indeed. And just like to echo what Ollie said, really, maybe I'm not one for team events in racing as a whole. The racing league wasn't for me, but maybe I'm mellowing and having turned 27 recently. But it's just one day a year. We can't expect, especially at this time with the major summer festivals of Glorious Goodwood, then going into York, when we want the big horses at those major meetings, we can't expect week in, week out afterwards that you know, the race to be supremely high class. And I actually watched it. I watched it from afar this weekend away in Scarborough, but it was really enjoyable, actually. I thought it was really important on Thursday when we were covering it, is that the race is filled as well. I know last year they didn't, and there was Ascot gave some criticism, obviously, of the bloated fixture lit programme for that. So now whether the racing league's demise has played a bit of a role in that is a fact, another factor. But it was thoroughly enjoyable, and getting a team of Ryan Moore, Safi Osborne and Dylan Brown McMonagall, Safi Osborne is one of those up-and-coming female riders in the UK, and then you've got Dylan Brown McMonagall, who's really gone to sort of superstardom this year especially, and is very much, alongside Colin Keane, probably the two best flat jockeys in Ireland at this stage. And Ryan Moore, he'll bring a massive pull in, as you say, from Hong Kong and an audience there. So they've used it very wisely in what could have been a very, you know, the racing isn't of the highest standard, but it's very competitive nonetheless. And bringing in that extra quality in the saddle with Ryan Moore and from the Hong Kong Jockey Club's in involvement in it as well has worked really, really well. I did enjoy it, and I'm happy for it to be once a year, as you say. It's that little sort of ease, height of the summer, relaxing party atmosphere before we kick off into the really big summer, major summer festival again at the Ebor Festival.
Yeah, good points, Matt. And one of the points that Matt made there, Ollie, was about how some trainers really support it and maybe question why some others don't support it. You were speaking to Ian Williams on Saturday, who's a big fan.
Yeah, he's a big supporter of the event, and he was talking about he just almost hitting out, going, he couldn't understand why last year you've got his horse had just won 40 grand for a 10 runner handicap. And he's going, how on earth are these races not full? Ascot have been, and he gave plenty of credit to Ascot for making this such a good day for owners, for trainers, and he thought it was quite good being able to use jockeys that he might normally get to use before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also a day when you see things you don't see elsewhere. For example, on Saturday, we saw Shergar's former groom, Dickie McCabe, having a reunion with Ryan Moore and explaining that a few years ago, he broke his back while cleaning Ryan Moore's windows. Thankfully, Dickie is now fitting well with a plate and six screws in his back, but still riding out. And there was some nice back and forth between him and Ryan, which you can read about in the piece Afar From The Track on Saturday. Ryan Moore's very profitable Saturday continued into Sunday. So I mentioned that the Phoenix Stakes was moved from Saturday to Sunday. And very helpfully, Ryan Moore won that as well, because he rode Sun Goddess, who'd finished second to Libertango in the Albany Stakes at Royal Ascot. She became Aidan O'Brien's 18th winner of the Phoenix Stakes and his first as a filly. How impressed were you, Matthew?
I was very impressed. It's interesting. Beforehand, I didn't think it was the best Phoenix Stakes in the world. Admittedly, it was a great Sunday for Group 1s across Europe after having sort of that Saturday with Lack in it, which I thought it worked really well. Still want to take it with a pinch of salt, really. Fascinated to see how that Albany Stakes form is holding up now. And it leaves us with a really good way to go in terms of the fillies division and over that six furlongs for the rest of the season. You know, Sun Goddess was beaten by Libertango in the Albany Stakes, and Libertango, we know, was beaten by Señorita Bonita, who was in the Duchess of Cambridge Stakes in Newmarket, and Señorita Bonita was beaten by Victorious, obviously stablemate of Sun Goddess, in the Queen Mary Stakes. So it's all that fillies juvenile sprinting form is all sort of knitting perfectly together. I mean, the main news from the Phoenix Stakes aftermath was we heard Victorious might not be seen again this season, which would be a real crying shame, as I thought, like many others, that she was above and beyond the best filly, juvenile filly we've seen this season so far at those trips, and how the form of the Queen Mary and whatnot's worked out so brilliantly well. So some fascinating pathways to go for the rest of the season. Wouldn't it be great if we see Sun Goddess, Libertango and Señorita Bonita all running the Cheveley Park Stakes at Newmarket, and maybe if they can get back Victorious as well to have that real crowning moment. Obviously, Mr. O'Brien, if he does get Victorious back with Sun Goddess, might want to keep them apart. So yeah, pinch of salt still about the Phoenix form, whether it's the best sort of Group 1, juvenile Group 1 we have this year. I probably don't think so at this stage. But at least sort of with a fascinating conundrums going on to the rest of the juvenile campaign, really.
It does. The autumn will be upon us soon. Ollie, while Aidan O'Brien is very well used to winning the Phoenix Stakes and very well used to winning everything, really, the Aga Khan studs are not associated with sprinters. You have to go all the way back to Blushing Groom winning the pre-Morney 50 years ago to find a horse winning a Group 1 over sprint distances for the Aga Khan's silks. That changed yesterday because Salmon Gan won the Group 1 pre-Maurice de Guest at Deauville, and he's a horse who they thought would be a Group 1 horse at the start of the year. It's taken him a while to get there, but he got there on Sunday.
Yeah, I imagine Francis Graffard and the Aga Khan team are absolutely delighted that he's got his Group 1. You know, as he said, they've all probably always thought that he definitely had one in him. I think they missed the guineas, didn't they, through a setback, and then went close in, maybe, was it the Prix Jean Prat too? But he's got his win. It was a really exciting race, I thought. You know, a thrilling finish to it, with division, Wathnam's division, closing really late, almost got there. I think you probably run that race again, he might get there. And as Richard Brown said after the race, his division is a horse too. They think he's got a Group 1 in him, and that's, you know, not a surprise after watching that. And down in fifth were True Love, sent off favourite, obviously the 1,000 guineas winner, who's still yet to win since that that race. And I always find that a bit sad when you have a horse that, you know, that wins the guineas like she did, and then has just kind of struggled since.
Yeah, it appears she sort of hit her level by now. Samangan wasn't the only horse to get that elusive Group 1 on Sunday, because in Germany, Tiffany won the Grosser Preis von Berlin for Sir Mark Prescott, Luke Morris, and in the colours of Elite Racing. She's knocked on the door a few times on Sunday. She got through much to the delight of her thrilled connections. We will move back to matters on the racecourse soon, looking at Ross Orion getting his 28-day suspension brought down to 10 days and a rise in careless riding suspensions in the last month. But before we do that, the latest on a subject that Tom Kerr and the team discussed last week, namely the Jockey Club's exit from the Racecourse Association. That was announced 7 days ago, last Monday morning. And in terms of what's happened since then, well, there's been a lot of disgruntlement from others to the Jockey Club's move, particularly from the Racecourse Association's chief executive, Alex Eade, who was on ITV on Saturday morning and spoke about bemusement that now was the time, he said, when we're choosing to tear ourselves apart, expressing disappointment. The Jockey Club had decided to walk from the RCA just after the RCA's governance review had delivered what Alex Eade said were mainly the changes that the Jockey Club had been asking for. Other people, including John Joe Sanderson, the Weatherby chief executive, have expressed disappointment that the Jockey Club have moved. Jim Mullen himself has been on a media round in recent days, and he was appearing on various platforms over the weekend, talking about the reasons why the Jockey Club had decided to leave the Racehorse Association at the end of this year. Two of the points he made I picked up in my column in today's newspaper and available digitally. One was, he said, that the continued involvement of the Jockey Club in the RCA will be frustrating because he envisaged the RCA continuing to frustrate efforts to create a fully independent BHA board. And that, I know, has really irked some people, who point out that during the efforts to get an independent board under Lord Allen's brief tenure of the BHA, the RCA board had basically agreed to create an independent board. It was then going to go to an extraordinary general meeting, but before that could happen, the commercial pre-race day data rights saga kicked off, in which the Jockey Club was heavily involved as well. So they say, look, the RCA wasn't responsible for there not being a BHA board, and the Jockey Club is as culpable as everybody else for there not being one to now. And Jim also made the point that his voice isn't being heard, or the Jockey Club's voice isn't being heard within the RCA at the moment. I think you could argue, and others have argued as well, that the voice is being heard through platforms like the Commercial Committee, but up to now, what Jim Mullen and the Jockey Club have been calling for hasn't been accepted, hasn't been enacted. As we go forward, I don't think anybody knows quite what is going to happen over the coming weeks and months. Jim Mullen hasn't yet put forward a clear vision for what he wants this new splinter group to provide, but many of the arguments that Jim is putting forward for racing's future do make complete sense, such as concentrating on the falling foal crop issue and the bloated fixture list. But whether his new splinter group and whether Ascot join that, whether some of the large independent racecourses join that, is at the moment still to be seen. But what is clear is that when the new BHA chair Simon Cox starts his job officially in October, he will have this as a big mess to deal with. In terms of where we are now, in terms of who's in and who's not in the Racecourse Association, here's Isabel Duff.
There are 56 tracks in England, Scotland and Wales. In 2024, Plumpton left the RCA. They said that the RCA was not paying attention to the concerns of smaller tracks. This year, in May, Ascot left too, but for completely the reverse reason. They felt smaller venues were given priority due to the one track, one vote system at the RCA. Now, Ascot is probably one of the few tracks in the country that has the authority to make a really bold move like this. Then, in early August, the Jockey Club dropped a bombshell because they announced they were also going to leave the RCA. That meant they were taking with them their 15 tracks, which includes Cheltenham, Aintree, Epsom, Newmarket, some of the most iconic tracks in the UK. Without those, the balance of power is really going to shift in racing, especially because the Jockey Club have made it clear that they would be interested in forming an association with the other tracks who have left. We still don't know what the major independents and the ARC group are going to do, but you can stay with us for all the latest updates on racing civil wars as this story pans out in the coming months.
Yeah, we'll be following that and updating the map over the coming weeks to see if other racecourses, presumably the main targets being the large independents, join Ascot, the Jockey Club and Plumpton in a world outside of the Racecourse Association. OK, we'll move on now to a story that we covered in the Racing Post last week in relation to careless riding and the number of suspensions that have been dished out by stewards in recent weeks. And Matt Rennie, they're on the rise.
Yeah, they are on the rise. And it painted a really interesting picture, actually, because it was trying to think to myself, well, actually, are they on the rise? And they are on the rise. But looking at some of the great data work that our colleague Peter Scargill's done, so they're on the rise. But the days are sort of more minimalised in a little bit of a way. It made me think the question, and still does, are we seeing more careless riding occurring, or is it just being policed more stringently, as in the authorities are trying to clamp down a bit more on what the Richard Hughes term, they called it the professional foul, is what happens, you know, in a group one, a jockey might let a horse drift a little bit one way or the other to close the door when they're three quarters of a length clear or whatnot, as irritating as they can be from a punter's perspective. The jockey might take the two to three day suspension or holiday they get if they're going for a major, major prize. No, it was really fascinating questions. I just think maybe the authorities are really are trying a little bit more to show that they're clamping down on it and policing it well, rather than more careless riding bans. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes on over the next sort of even the next year or two, when we look at the major festivals this time next year, if they're on the rise or whatnot. And it's interesting in Britain as well, you know. It could, if we get so many careless riding bans eventually and it proves that there is more careless riding, are we going to open a can of worms to where our rules are going to have to become far stricter and mirror places on the globe? You know, I'm thinking the likes of France, they're incredibly strict on letting your horse drift, even if it's minimal, and stewards' inquiries, they're incredibly strict, and the minimal interference can result in an overturning of a result in a way. And it has had criticism before. I remember Glenn Eagles in the Jean-Luc Lagardère all them years ago, I think 2014, was demoted from first to third for very much minimal interference, I thought, at that time. So, no, really interesting piece, and there's probably going to be more to sort of, not rumble on, but plenty of questions left to go in intrigue, in a way, rather than just in controversy, I'd say.
Yeah, just picking up on some of the numbers that Matt referenced that Pete Scargill had produced in this piece. So careless riding suspensions last month, so July 2026, were 36% higher than in 2025 compared to 2024, July 2024. The number of suspension days handed out for careless riding was up by 72%. And there was also noted within Pete's piece, a spike against data compiled from stewards' reports covering January to July for 2023 and 2026, which showed a 5% increase in the number of race day inquiries that resulted in a sanction for a rider, although at the same time the number of suspended days given dropped by 5%. Ollie, watching racing as you do, have you noticed anything different in the last month or so?
No, I can't say that I have really gone, oh, wow, there's a massive increase in that jockey's doing that. You know, I haven't noticed that, and I watch a lot of racing, and reading the piece that Pete did, it's great. But the number, although it's like a 72% jump maybe this month, but I think when you look at the numbers as a whole, kind of year to year, I don't think there's actually that much cause for concern. It's not like, oh, God, the jockeys are all suddenly this month decided to start riding like nutters. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, no, I, I agree. And the point that Richard Hughes was making in the piece was that riders will always ride to the edge of the rules. I thought another interesting point was made, Matt, by Martin Dwyer, in that he noted some recently successful appeals that riders have lodged against suspensions, and suggesting that if they believe that the appeal process is going to be particularly favourable to them, that might in itself encourage them to risk getting a suspension if they believe that that suspension will be rescinded on appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's whether it leads back to, do we then go even stricter on the appeal process and whatever the rules are at the current, and making them more watertight in that way. I think, as Richard Hughes rightly said, and I'm sure Martin Dwyer probably thinks it as well, it's the same in any sport. You're going to go right to the edge of what you can do if you want to win, especially in professional sport, not for example village cricket or village football, but in professional football and professional cricket, you are going to push the boundaries of what you can and can't do. It's just, that's just the way sport is, as you need that extra edge in an incredibly competitive environment, and especially if you're a jockey who might not have a retainership or the backing of a major trainer, or even if you do, you're an individual at the end of the day in the saddle, and you want to be the best and get the best result possible. So yeah, very, very interesting. It's whether, and interesting that, you know, the appeals are being successful. It maybe shows that it's all down to objectivity in the end, rather than objectivity. Some people might think that's more a careless rider than what someone else might think. You know, I think the thankful thing is we're not seeing any amount of reckless riding, I don't think, at the moment. And thankfully, that's a very rare occurrence anyway in this country. So, yes, fascinating sort of insights. I think the jockeys here are generally of a good standard at the moment. I think there's higher standards elsewhere just at this stage, and that might be down to the riding rules there. But, you know, very, very interesting subject area indeed.
Yeah, and just going forward, the BHA confirmed to Pete in the piece last week that a consultation process is taking place at the moment in relation to the interference rules. Well, another rule that was in the news last week was the one that relates to jockeys easing down at the end of races and thereby not getting the best possible position. It relates to Ross O'Ryan, who was in the news when he appeared to ease down in a two-year-old race at Sandown, very close to the line, and not for very long, but the stewards took the view that by doing that, he had cost his horse certain victory. They suspended him for 28 days. Ross O'Ryan didn't say much at the time. He kept his own counsel, but took it to appeal, and that appeal, Ollie, was partially successful, with the stewards reducing his suspension from 28 days to 10 days because, I'm trying to precis the reasoning, they took the view that he wouldn't definitively have won the race, mm-hmm. but that maybe he could have won the race. So because it went from would have won the race to could have won the race, it was a lesser offence, and they gave him 10 days, not 28. Did that surprise you?
I don't think it surprised me now. You know, watching back the replay, the horse that won was finishing in incredibly quickly. And I know Rossa briefly stopped riding. I don't think they can definitively say that Rosso would have won the race, and I think the 28 days ban he got was maybe slightly harsh, but look, what Rosso did, I think, it's a shocking mistake. You know, it's cost punters, it's cost connections, but I think they're probably right to say that we don't really know, you know, it's hypothetical whether he would have or could have won, but how fast the winning horse finished, that brief second that Rossa stops riding, I don't think it's clear to say that if Rossa had continued riding, whether he definitely would have won.
Yes, it's a trick one, isn't it? Because the stewards did take the view that Rossa had done something that merited a suspension in the end. When you look at what he did, do you think that 10 days was about right for the severity of the crime, if you like?
It's a very good question, actually. Yes, to an extent. I don't, like Ollie said, I don't think it warranted the maximum 28 days that we've seen before. I remember there was a horse at It would have been Chelmsford, Pats, Cosgrove, Rhino Horse for George Bowie, where he significantly eased up and he got nabbed completely on the line. That one warranted 28 days. I still don't think the optics were great at all. I don't understand for the life of me why jockeys can't just ride out to the finish, even if it's strong hands and heels rather than using the whip. I mean, he might have used up the whip. I know, and I hope I'm not a rider, so they might argue the horse is tired, we need to look after them. I understand that, but maybe fully in riding and showing effort wouldn't have, you know, in general wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't go amiss really, because we've seemed to have a couple of these over the recent years that it's come into this sort of really opaque area. So 28 days, I think, think about it now, 10 just right, but I don't think it stops from the fact, look, he could have won, and it's an incomplete opaque area, and whether we need to think about in the rules shoring that up as well to say, look, we do think he stops riding and we need to put him down maybe for a 12, 14 day suspension rather than just 10, because he has stopped riding, whether irrespective if he was going to win or could have won or not. So there's a few areas, as Ollie said, a few loopholes which have been sort of expertly used in a way. And it's quite important for Rosser as well that the ban was reduced, because obviously he had a whip ban that ruled him out of most of Glorious Goodwood as well. And obviously he's still faintly in the title race behind Billy Lochnan and Ushi Murphy. And for him as well as an ARC winning rider and one of the elite in Britain, missing the Ebor meeting would have been a travesty really, for his season. It would have been a disaster. So look, I think, well, I just think in the hindsight of everything and for the future, I think just please just keep trying to ride out to the line for as long as you possibly can to avoid messy situations like this down the line.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, punters in France would have been saying that yesterday. If you do a bit of Googling, there was an instance at Lyon d'Angers racecourse where a jockey called Sébastien Derieux absolutely went off the gas at the end of the race and cost his man what did appear to be certain victory. If there's a horse that you wouldn't have done that on, it was Big Bucks, because he always seemed to hit a flat spot in his races, but then he always came good, so much so that he retired as the greatest long-distance hurdler of all time, a four-time Stayers Hurdle winner, a four-time winner of the Liverpool Hurdle Aintree, a triple winner of the Long Walk Hurdle. At one point, he held the record for the most consecutive jumps wins. He had 18 victories in a row. The 17th of those victories took him past the Ken's 1950s record. And although Altior subsequently took that record, Big Bucks very much remains the finest, the greatest staying hurdler of all time. And very sadly, on Saturday, we reported that he had died on Friday at the Devon home of Mike and Lucy Felton, who had him in what was a long and happy retirement, in which Mike reported that Big Bucks largely just pottered around and enjoyed himself because he'd done all he had to do in what was an exceptional racing career, a career that Paul Nichols, Ruby Walsh and Paul Stewart of the Stewart family that owned Big Bucks, headed up by the late Andy Stewart, they all paid tribute to what was a wonderful, wonderful racehorse. Ollie, I guess, given that you are a couple of years younger than me, Big Bucks might not have been on your active racing horizon, but you'll no doubt know all about him and have a high opinion of him.
Yeah, it's a bit, as you say, slightly before my time when I got into racing. But I can really appreciate what a superstar he is. And it's been superb reading all the everyone talking about him and watching the videos back of some of his races. You know, I watched one of his... I think his final Stayers Hurdle win, and with superb commentary from Richard Hoyles, and kind of just goosebumps watching back. You know, just a horse that's just absolutely adored by everyone, and you know, horses when they get a following, everyone loves them. It's quite rare considering the amount of horses that we have in the sport, and when you get one that's just adored by so many people, it's really special. So it's really sad news.
Yeah, absolutely is. He was a great horse, Matt.
Oh, unbelievable. Actually, I felt an absolute pleasure to be getting into racing. I properly got into racing sort of about 2009, 2010. And to have Big Bucks, Quarto Star and Denman as the three sort of Trojan horses and the patriarchs of jumps racing, I feel like I completely lucked out in becoming a racing lover. at that time, and obviously then we had Frankel on the flat following up. We were an absolute abundance of riches, but Big Bucks himself, you know, we've had great staying hurdlers before. Barracuda springs to mind, but Big Bucks made the staying hurdle division what it is, and I don't think we'll ever see the staying hurdle division. I know we've had Paisley Park since, he was a wonderful, wonderful horse, and again at Peoples Wars, and probably the closest we've had to Big Bucks since in that division, but nothing will ever light that division up like Big Bucks did again. And actually, funny enough, I think also it's fair to say, I think one of the greatest rides in defeat came behind Big Bucks in that 2012 Stayers Hurdle, when Andrew Lynch rode followed Lavadette so brilliantly and was so tactically good on her to try and catch Big Bucks out, but he just simply wasn't having it. He was just an unbelievable horse, and it's quite emotional thing with, you know, poor Corto Star, Denman, and Big Bucks are no longer with us now, and hopefully having a wonderful time wherever they are now, hopefully galloping each other in horse heaven, but that the end of that era is really nearly upon us now. But just an absolutely magnificent horse. The superlative run out for what he achieved. He was just the ultimate. If you could have a horse almost like one of your most reliable, high-quality cars and machines we get, Big Bucks was absolutely that. He was just simply a legend.
Yeah, he was a proper racing legend. We've got some amazing racing to look forward to on next week's show. We'll be looking ahead to the Ebor Festival. Just very quickly, I'm going to ask you both, Ollie first, Constitution River or Ombudsman?
Ombudsman.
Ombudsman. Matt?
Ombudsman.
And I am going to say Ombudsman. 3-0 for Ombudsman, but I won't be surprised if Constitution River won either. We'll talk about all that next week. Until then, one thing I mustn't forget to tell you is that the big kickoff is very much now there for you to read, purchase and enjoy and to profit from. Our preview of the football season is available in today's copy of the Racing Post, Monday's Racing Post. You can also buy it separately as a digital product, and our video preview of the new season featuring Mark Langdon and the team is also now available on our YouTube channel, so do enjoy that. Thank you to Matt, thank you to you, Ollie Sparkling Debut, thank you to you for watching, thanks to Isabel as well. So many thanks, so much to talk about, as will be the case next week. Until then, bye-bye.